Hello, Kate Lamb here, and you're listening to Asia Calling. Coming up on the show this week, we have a special edition on film, on cinema, on movies across the region, from all-girl gangs on the big screen in the Philippines to enforced nationalism in Indian cinemas and experimenting with vintage celluloid film in Indonesia in a warehouse stuck in time. Welcome to Asia Calling, and thanks for tuning into the show. An old warehouse with a unique history in Jakarta is a literal laboratory of film. Inside, filmmakers have worked with rare equipment that they've discovered in the building, resurrecting old celluloid film, old school reels of film, and producing experimental modern cinema. Nicole Kirby met with several of the filmmakers from Lab Laba Laba, or the Spider Lab Collective, to find out more.
There's a warehouse in East Jakarta that's several stories high and until recently was crawling with spiders, cockroaches and rats. It was covered in dust and reeked of chemicals and vinegar, the pungent scent of disintegrating celluloid film.
Yeah, several people believe it's haunted.
On the first floor, filmmaking equipment had been ransacked, while rolls of film were left scattered across the floor.
Storage of the film smelled and very bad. The condition is very bad. Dark, no electricity, no aircon, of course.
When filmmaker Angun Priambodo discovered the office upstairs, it looked stuck in time.
Like the glass, pen, book, the candy, the coffee, still there. Everybody go out because that's maybe the last day you work there, and then the magazine, the newspaper, the paperworks still there in the table.
It's like, let's stop making film, okay, oops, go on.
Lubang Buaya, 1 October 1965.
Back in the day, this warehouse was known as Produksi Film Negara, the State Film Production Centre, or PFN for short. It's where thousands of Indonesian films and propaganda materials were produced during the more than three decades of Suharto's dictatorship. After he fell, the doors of PFN were shuttered too. But a decade on, a group of artists searching for a darkroom and filmmaking equipment pried open its dusty doors once more. Filmmakers Angun and Adit Mato Diharjo told me the story.
Yeah, it's like opening a factory of propaganda at the time, you know. It's like 80s to 90s, Suharto used PFN to help him spread the propaganda with audiovisual and with moving image, so
like a museum but very bad condition.
In those years there was only one TV channel, TVRI. All its content was produced at PFN. For the millions of Indonesians who went to school in the 80s and 90s, violent propaganda films were played every year at school, on TV and also at the cinema. Here's Angung.
Every year, go to the cinema to watch that kind of film. We are very loyal, but we saw it like a very dangerous scene, like the killing people, and then that's. I think that movie is only for adult, not for the youngster. But yeah, elementary school must. Watch that movie. That's very strange. Very, very violent. Very, very violent. A lot of blood.
Yeah. masih terus bungkam! Bungkam! Bungkam!
Through these films, Suharto's version of history, especially the story of how he became president in 1965, was screened to the masses. It's a history that Indonesia is still hotly debating today. In typical dictator fashion, Suharto threw money and resources at these films, explains Adit.
They're really passionate about it. They really put everything into it. It's like a bunch of engineer, film director and everything put into one building. And Suharto really put everything, you know, the budget and everything, because maybe he knew the power of moving image.
Some of the films made at PFN Lab are now stored in the National Archives. But a lot was left abandoned. In the tropical heat, they've quickly decomposed. And that's where Lab Labba Labba, or the Spider Lab Collective, comes in. A group of artists and experimental filmmakers, Lab Labba Labba, have used the film rolls that they found at PFN to produce new creations altogether. Some use the old footage to address the history that it's part of, tackling propaganda and censorship, while others, like Adit, have used the old film rolls in totally different ways. Using direct film technique, Adit takes old film rolls, cuts them, and draws on the celluloid film, creating animations that play across the backdrop of old film footage. It's something that they've been able to share with children, running workshops for kids as young as 5 years old, who make their own animations by drawing on the old film rolls. But as new layers of stories are told over old, not all the cobwebs of history have been cleaned out. In Jakarta, this is Nicole Kirby for Asia Calling.
India's Supreme Court has triggered a huge controversy by making it compulsory to play the national anthem in cinemas across the country. The court order requires everyone to honour the rule by standing up when the anthem is played inside the movies. As Bismila Gilani reports, the rule has led to harassment and the arrest of dozens of moviegoers, and calls are growing for the court to reconsider its decision.
Why is it that the national anthem has to be played before going out for a movie? I mean, what kind of a complex do Indians have?
48-year-old Salil Chaturvedi is a disability activist. Several years ago, an accident left him paralyzed from the waist down. That's why, when he went to a movie theater in October, he couldn't stand up to show respect as the national flag appeared on the screen and the national anthem was played. What came next was a rude shock for Chaturvedi.
There was a couple behind me who sang the whole national anthem with great fervor. And in the middle of it, I got whacked at the back of my head. And I turned around and the guy asked me to stand up. So I turned back to the screen and waited for the national anthem to get over. After which I turned back and I was so shell-shocked and I just told him, relax, why do you have to, you know, I like the way you sang, but why do you have to hit someone and you don't even know the story here?
Chaturvedi hasn't been to a movie theater since.
It just isn't comfortable. This guy, he hit me, but someone else could hit me harder. I have a spinal problem. And the explanation of, you know, the fact that I'm disabled will happen much after that. So I live in fear. I haven't gone out.
But that was last year, when playing the national anthem in cinemas and standing for it was not even mandatory. Now it is. Last month, the Supreme Court ordered all cinema owners to make sure the national anthem is played at the beginning of every movie. The ruling came in response to a petition filed by social activist Shyam Narayan Choksi. He says he was mocked in a cinema hall when he stood up in respect as the national anthem was played in part of a film.
I was shocked that instead of joining a person who was respecting the national anthem, they were mocking and shouting at me for causing a disturbance. That day I realized how unaware people are about nationalism, and I decided to do something about it.
Since the order came into force late last month, unruly scenes like this have been reported in several places, while people like 35-year-old Rohit Kumar have been arrested and charged with disrespecting the national anthem for refusing to stand while it is played in cinemas. But Kumar says the ruling is ridiculous. The anthem, he says, can't make you patriotic, and respect for your nation is something you hold within. The practice of playing the national anthem in cinemas was mandatory in the 1960s, following the India-China War. But it was slowly discontinued in most parts of the country, when authorities realized that people were growing indifferent and inadvertently disrespecting it. Now, its reintroduction after decades has raised many eyebrows. Among the critics are legal luminaries such as Soli Surabji, who believes the Supreme Court has overstepped its mandate with this order.
Patriotism cannot be legislated. Patriotism cannot be judicially mandated. And I'm sure many people are patriotic, even if they don't stand up. The question is this a matter in which the judiciary should intervene? Judiciary enforces fundamental rights, very good. Judicial activism has done very good for the people, especially the marginalized sections, exploited sections. But this matter, I think the judiciary has gone a little haywire.
Many say the move is an invitation to ultra-nationalists to harass those they deem less patriotic. Senior journalist Shivam Vij argues the ruling even goes against the very philosophy of Rabindranath Tagore, who gave India its national anthem.
Gurudev Rabindranath Tagore, the man who wrote the national anthem, he said that nationalism is a menace. He warned the Congress party, the people of India, the people of the world against nationalism. He said, there's some things that are above nationalism, and that is humanity. And what we are losing here is our sense of humanity.
While the government and Hindu nationalist groups have welcomed the ruling, many have also challenged it. The Supreme Court is likely to hear the matter again next month. From New Delhi, this is Bismillah Gilani for Asia Calling.
You're listening to Asia Calling on KBR. A film that featured street girls as actors has taken out the Best Actress Award at the Mindanao Film Festival in Davao in the southern Philippines. Titled Panon, the film is inspired by true events from the year 2002, following a bloody clash between all-girl gangs. Panon also highlights the root causes of juvenile crime, as well as justice and rehabilitation. Madonna Varola and Marielle Guardiola have this report from Davao City.
That's the main character of the film, Kakay. When she was 17, Kakay stabbed and killed in Chik, a member of a rival gang called Warshak. Here she is in the film seeking forgiveness from the victim's mother.
Bayaran ako
This scene is among the highlights from the 20-minute film shown last month at the 12th Mindanao Film Festival in President Rodrigo Duterte's hometown of Davao. Kakay's characters based on real-life events, although the names have been changed. In the early 1990s to 2000s, street gangs, usually composed of minors, often got caught up in violent clashes in Davao. Social worker Carla Canarias handles the case of the character the film is based on and says if you dig deeper into the issues around juvenile crime, abuse often springs from abuse.
I learned she used to be hung upside down inside the sack and beaten up very often. I met her first during her brother's funeral. He was also a victim of gang wars. Kakay wandered around to hunt for her brother's killer and also became involved in an all-girl gang. She was a survivor of a riot when she was stabbed and almost died. She also experienced sexual abuse in the gangster environment.
Lead actress Laura Parapina played Kakay in the film and was awarded Best Actress at the event, which this year carried the theme Cinema of Change. Growing up, Laura had a similar experience with gangs. Most people, she says, are quick to dismiss rather than try and understand why young people get involved in crime.
They have no idea why we became this way. I hope they won't judge us because it hurts. To fellow youth like us, take this negative perception as a challenge. Show them that they are wrong, that they have a bright future ahead.
And that is the core message of the film, explains Joyce Penales from the Tambayan Center for Children's Rights, a local NGO that was involved in the production of the film. Penales explains how the idea of the film started.
First is nag-conceptualize muna paano siya gagawin.
We first came up with the idea for the film, and then we had script writing and auditions for the performers. Then we had meetings with the actors and the real-life gang members, especially the character of Kakay. They were very supportive.
The filmmakers were careful to protect those involved in the story. That included not revealing the identity of the real-life characters and refraining from having the children act out sensitive scenes. In real life, Kakay was released from jail after 3 years because of the Juvenile Justice and Welfare Act of 2006, which upholds the rights of the child.
It's not only 1 year, it would take many years.
But that was after months of intensive counseling, as well as meetings with social workers, police, and the victim's mother. This is part of the restorative justice process that is the framework for juvenile justice involving child and youth offenders in the Philippines. But as social worker Carla from Tambayan points out, youth acting out is usually indicative of deeper social problems.
Sinasabi nga namin sa, like, sa Tambayan karon na actually,
as we often say in Tambayan, the way children are only mirrors the bigger problems in society. They are not the reason. They're just the victims of our shortcomings as duty bearers and the government. Do we have programs, services, opportunities for them? And do these programs reach them?
For Asia Calling, this is Madonna Virola reporting from the Philippines.
Finally, on Asia Calling, in the male-dominated culture of northwestern Pakistan, women don't go to the cinema at all. Increasing militancy and extremism in the region have seen women become socially isolated, barred from even leaving their homes without men. But some have had enough. Asia Calling's Mudassar Shah recently met with one group of women who are pushing to be allowed to create public recreational space for women, like a women's-only space, to watch films.
This dingy cinema hall is thick with the smell of smoke. Almost a dozen men have come to watch a film at this cinema in Peshawar. just 40 miles from the Afghan border. Men shout in hoot as the hero of the film comes on screen. Going to the cinema here is a male-dominated affair. Often the films are even pornographic. Women are definitely not allowed inside. That's not the only problem. Over the years, militants have also targeted movie theaters, while cinema owners and actors have received death threats from the Taliban. Markets and shops that sell videos and DVDs have also been attacked. But while hardliners see cinema as a sign of social decay, in Pashtun society, movies are one of the only sources of entertainment. Sana Ijaz is women's rights activist with local NGO Sherkatga. Together with her colleagues, Sana has conducted a survey in four districts of the province to identify women's needs. Here is what she found.
We live in war zones where we suffer from trauma. Mental satisfactions and psychological contentment can only be possible if women are engaged in sports or if parks or cinemas are built for women. We have included the constructions of playgrounds, parks and cinema for women in our charter of demands.
The result of the survey have been shared with the local government, but it won't be easy. Women in Peshawar largely remain in their houses at all times, busy with household chores and looking after the family and their children. Without a male member of the family, women don't even leave the house. Neelam Rahim is from Swathweli. She says it's time for change.
Most women have been confined to their houses since the Talibanization in Swat Valley. So they need recreational spaces where they can go out of the house and enjoy some free time. There's no harm in women going to the cinema to watch movies, but they can't go because the men are always calling out to them, harassing them.
Sana and her organization are working hard to see recreational spaces, including cinemas, built for women. But they are facing resistance. Amara Shah Jahan works as a researcher at the Government Directorate of Culture in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province. She says the government doesn't have any plan to open up cinema for women.
I am sure that families would rush to cinema if the filmmakers would keep families in mind while making films. Unfortunately, there is no film that family members can watch together under one roof of a cinema. The dialogues and songs are vulgar, therefore the cinemas cannot attract families in our area.
Then there is the resistance from men too. ...24-year-old Wali Jan studies religion after college.
Wherever we can stop women from going to the cinema, we will. I'm sure that thousands of young men will take every step to stand against any such act from the government or any organization. One should not forget that in this province, our political parties have even banned pictures on posters. So construction of a women's cinema is out of question.
But women like Sana Ijaz aren't taking no for an answer.
Everyone has the right to agree or disagree with anything. But if they try to use force to stop us from getting our rights, then we also know how to resist and take a stand.
From Peshawar, Pakistan, Mudassar Shah reports for Isha Calling.
That's all for this edition of Asia Calling. Thanks for tuning into the show. Our program today was produced in the studios of Radio KBR in Jakarta, Indonesia. To find out more about our show, send us a message on our Facebook page. You can find us on Asia Calling, and do follow us on Twitter at Asia Calling. You can now also podcast the show. Go to the iTunes store and search for Asia Calling, and you can subscribe to our weekly episodes for free. I'm Kate Lamb, back next week with more stories from Asia.
Sun.